No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr, and we got my college buddy Tyler Dunn with us today. Tyler is the proprietor of Go Long TD, which is an excellent football substack with more than 15,000 subscribers. Please join in the fun. He's the author of the recent Blood and Guts, the story of the tight end. So many good stories in that book, by the way. We did a pod a couple of months ago about Jeremy Shockey fist fighting everybody like Russell Crowe drinking and fighting around the world. And he's the host of the Go Long podcast, which I highly suggest subscribing to. Also, a graduate of Daily Orange University, one of the best football writers in the game. Tyler, what's happening, buddy?
Oh, man, it is always so good when we have an excuse to get together like this. It just makes me miss those days running around 7440 Ostrom and Chucks and Lord knows what else we got into. Those were the good old days. I mean, they really were the good old days now because it was, you know, a decade plus ago.
Here are a couple things that we can tell our kids that they won't know what it is when we say that we did together in college. For example, dollar draft night at Chuck's. That's not going to exist anymore. Like, the new dollar draft night when our kids are in college is going to be like a $6.50 draft night. And they're going to be like, wow, I got two beers for $13. Another one would be working at a print newspaper. they're gonna be like, what the hell is that? You what do you mean? They put all the blogs on paper and delivered it to your doorstep? Yes, they did.
Granted, we both of our hairlines, you know, took an L, but I think really the print. We put out a daily newspaper. Maybe like the last wave of student, I don't know, maybe there's some daily papers out there still, but I doubt it. I mean, we did that every day.
Probably not. I bet we were the last independent, financially independent, full-time student daily newspaper. I think they do it like a couple times a week now, the Daily Orange.
Also, you can throw Flip Night into that bucket as well at Fagan's. I'm not sure if they have Flip Night still, but that was pretty sweet.
For those of you who don't know, you flip a coin, and if you call it in the air, you get the beer for free. I remember being around some people who got on some serious heaters. I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 in a row, and obviously not a great morning afterwards, but those were like the nights that stuff that legend was made out of. Do you ever go on like an epic heater on one of those?
I mean, how great is it that it was always Wednesday night, like right in the middle of the school week? Like everybody go to Fagan's, and then it'd be so packed at Fagan's for flip night that was a big Chuck's night across the street. Remember, so it was like, oh, the line to get in here is insane. Well, then it became just a big old drinking night all the way around on Marshall. So that was great. Yeah. Oh, man. Now you really have me missing those days. But yeah, I doubt that exists anymore.
Wednesday was the true start of my weekend. It was Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And then Sunday we had to be in for the newspaper. So like Sunday night, you kind of dial it down. Didn't really do a big NFL Sunday because we had to print the newspaper and stuff. So Wednesday to me was really the true kickoff of the weekend. And then you Thursday and Friday classes were just, they were optional. I was thinking about that the other night. Like, I don't know if you have any dreams still where you're ill prepared for a final coming up. Like I still have those dreams constantly. But with the difference between me and other people is they're real classes that I didn't show up to in college, you know, like history of, what was the one? Modern European politics. And it was like, you know, like Ireland's economy. And just like, I had to do like a 2000 word essay on the Celtic tiger economy. And I was like, I've never been to any of these classes, have no idea what you're talking about. Like, let's see what Wikipedia has for me.
You're right. And you're trying to write your way out of the jam, right? Like just flowery, just
nothing's
pump
changed.
It up. Just hope the,
still doing it.
Hope the professor can't read through your bullshit. But as long as you can stay, hover around a 3.0 and mom and dad were happy. I know my parents understood the Daily Orange. That is the real education here. Because yeah. We were running a student newspaper, a daily newspaper, and that's what led to, you know, us supporting our own families today. So they got it.
We're sitting there reading like old Gary Smith Sports Illustrated articles and doing bad impressions of them in student newspapers. But then they inevitably pop up like on in a poli-sci paper too, where it's just like, you know, can you hear it? There was singing in the land that day. And it's like the teacher's like, this guy didn't go to any. He didn't pay attention to a goddamn thing all semester.
Watching Letarian Milton videos at 3 a.m. with Andy McCullough. Right?
Oh, it's all good. We made it. We're going to get into a little bit of, I want to get your take on gambling. I want to do some, which is odd, right? And then I want to do some over-unders. So we're actually going to provide some sort of, not gambling advice, right? Never take my gambling advice, but we're going to talk in the gambling space. But first, maybe perhaps what is going to be the most bet on sporting event of the century. I need to get your take on the Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg cage match. What's happening here?
Well, you know what? I'm no MMA expert, but I think it's going to come down to blood and guts in this situation, right? That's what it's going to come down to. It's not going to be training. It's going to be blood and guts. I'm just ironically saying that, of course, the blood and guts is what this will be decided on. I'm going Elon. I think I read somewhere that what's his move, the walrus, when he just kind of lays on you? Or I don't know. I feel like there's a little more mass. He's going to throw his weight around. And, you know, the lack of formal training in this situation compared to Zuckerberg is going to be the key to victory.
I'm the only one so far, and I've run this by like five or six people, that I don't think it's going to be, if they were really allowed to have a full on, if they're really going to do it, like it's not going to be Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor where they just kind of like, they're going in there for a paycheck. If this was an actual fist fight, I think Mark Zuckerberg would absolutely smoke Elon Musk. The guy has formal jiu-jitsu training. I think he said something like he only trained jiu-jitsu, but then ended up running like a 19-minute 5K, which is pretty fast. And that's what kind of shape this guy is in. Elon, I don't know, man. I mean, if you're not trained in the art of jiu-jitsu and you just fight someone who knows what they're doing in jiu-jitsu, I feel like you're going to get smoked. Could be wrong.
I think in personality traits, and I don't know either individual, you know, I've never met Elon or Mark, obviously, but, you know, Mark strikes me as very buttoned up. You know, he's punching in, he's punching out, he's cordial, he's kind, he's polite. He's not necessarily publicly sparring with anybody out in the open. Elon's pretty volatile. You know, he's not afraid to go after somebody, and he's got some wit to him. I think he's pretty funny at times. He's not afraid to piss people off. I think that's a quality in the ring that he'll lean into that. And there's got to be a little extra juice to the situation. And I feel like I think he's just going to be more pissed off, right? There's going to be a little something extra.
Did you ever watch the movie A Christmas Story, where Ralphie just unleashes on the bully and beats the living hell out of him? That to me is Mark Zuckerberg, where I feel like this guy's taken a lot of crap. And I mean, if you believe the movie The Social Network, he literally started Facebook because he was mad at a bunch of other people and then grew it into multi-billion dollar enterprise. And so, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of heat in there, right? He's just been taking it. We've all been making fun of him. The picture of him on the jet ski. Oh, look at this skinny guy. And then I think that all just comes out in just an epic sort of like face mashing. All I want though is I want a little blood. Like I want there to I want someone to actually get hurt. I don't want this to be a thing where I got to pay $50 for it. And then, you know, they're all just like, haha, you know, just kidding. Like I do need this to be a little bit of a celebrity death match without the death.
You could be right. I tend to think he's just a nerd. And I think that what you see is what you get with Mark Zuckerberg.
Your nerd radar is going off.
I don't think there's anything bubbling beneath the surface there. I think he's just going to, you know, waltz into the arena and get his ass beat. But, you know, I've done no research on this matchup. I really have no intel whatsoever. It's just a gut feeling. But I'm with you. There's got to be blood. There's got to be an injury. I don't want to see. Remember those old celebrity boxing? Didn't Manute Bol fight somebody in one of those?
Oh God, probably.
I think he did. I just remember watching it, and there was like nothing happened.
No, now it's like it's just Le'Veon Bell and Frank Gore all the time. Adrian Peterson, yeah. You know, like. But I will not be placing a wager on this because I feel like it's given me Rob Gronkowski Super Bowl halftime field goal vibes, where there's probably something going on there, and gambling companies are just going to use it to make some money off of it, which. So I know you did a gambling pod. I've written about it a lot, and I think this whole thing is awful. Like I really do. Like I think it's one of those things where we've gotten now, I think, 4 or 5 players in their athletic prime that have lost a year to gambling suspensions. And my take on the whole thing, and we're gonna get into the. We're going to get into win over unders in a little bit, but I think this is kind of like an interesting segue into it. But my take is like the NFL just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. And then they're just like, oh, we'll deal with the side effects later. We'll grab gambling by the leash and the collar, and we'll throw it into our repertoire. And then, oh, we didn't even think about the fact that like players are going to gamble. You know, these guys have an unsecure future. They're going to try to make an ancillary income. They know about this. And also gambling's addictive. You know, I think the Wall Street Journal story that said like kids between like 18 and 24 are kind of in deep weeds with this, you know, and it's not going well. Like, I don't know. I could do away with gambling. It's hard enough to make money these days.
Manute Bol fought Refrigerator Perry, by the way. I just had to look that up. It was awful. God. I was awful.
Cheaper.
So nobody waste their time YouTubing that. I'm sure it's out there. I'm with you, Connor. I'm not a gambling connoisseur. I've dabbled. I think we've all at some point added the app, taken the free money. I did that on Caesars or one of them. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty sweet. You're giving me this free money to gamble and I won a decent amount. And it's like, oh yeah, you're just basically a drug dealer getting me hooked on your product. And, you know, it's going to lead to some consequences if I stick with this.
Right.
And that's kind of what the NFL is supporting here. They're going to make billions of dollars, but they have made something that was already happening. Obviously everybody's been gambling since, you know, the Black Sox, and you know, who knows what games were thrown back in the 20s and 30s. But they made it so easy. I mean, you can just as easily lose thousands of dollars as you can refresh your Instagram feed to look at puppies. It's kind of insane. And part of me gets it because obviously they're going to try to get as much money as they possibly can all the time. But I think the NFL and the owners really have to consider, at what point are we doing damage to the public trust? Because granted, these are NFL investigations, so they're investigating right. themselves here. And if they run across a star player, right, imagine any name, are they really going to want that player to get suspended for the integrity? Who knows? But I think the more this happens, you know, another wave and another wave and another wave of players getting suspended for 6 games or indefinitely or making prop bets with little knowledge of the situation, that's going to chip away. I would think, even though aliens are visiting us and nobody seems to care, right? There's UFOs, aliens hanging out. I mean, yeah, they are amongst us and nobody cares. So we all have the attention span of squirrels and chipmunks. I still think that over time, this would kind of chip away at the shield, the almighty shield, and have a detrimental effect on the NFL, you know, beyond the dollars and cents. That's why I was thinking the other day, Connor, like, I think the best thing for the NFL is almost if one of their best players did get caught gambling and was suspended. And there was like a Paul Hornung effect here, right? Mm-hmm. Like back in 1963, when the NFL was not the NFL, it was right there with Major League Baseball and not really the number one sport in America. That when Pete Rozelle suspended Paul Hornung and Alex Karras, I mean, Michael McCambridge's book, America's Game, is unbelievable on everything, but this topic especially. I mean, that like told the world, told the country, don't worry, like the integrity of the game will be secure here. So if they do run across a big name, I think they should almost look at it like, okay, our inclination, our instinct is to make this go away, to be Greg on Succession and shred the documents. Although Greg did keep some papers. That's right. But they should suspend that player. They should suspend him. And I think that would send a great message to the public.
Yeah, I think you'd almost need, which is why, like, if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm almost daring the NFL to do it, right? I'm making a FanDuel account, and my user photo is me in my football jersey, and it's just, like, patrick.mahomes@chiefs.nfl.com. And I'm just like, yeah, go ahead, suspend me and see what happens. Because, you know, when I remember when the Isaiah Rodgers thing happened, the Colts player, he was like he bet on his own team, and that was sort of the crossing the Rubicon moment. But a lot of, I don't know if you remembered, but like in the days leading up to it, everyone was intimating that it was Michael Pittman Jr., the wide receiver, which ended up not being true. But I was thinking about it. And so if you think about Michael Pittman, right, that is a guy who is the subject of actual over-under prop bets, right? And someone who could easily manipulate that sort of thing. And then from there on out, every dropped pass is called into question. Every sort of, if you're a quarterback, every interception, every throwaway, all that kind of stuff, you know, maybe that the apps make it so you can't be winning like gobs and gobs of money on this. But what is stopping you from just hiring a surrogate? And if you're Josh Allen, just being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to smoke the Commanders this weekend. What's the over under on completions? 35. Okay. You know, I'll just call a couple checks at the line and I'll do that. Throw 40 grand on it. You know,
I think you're right. I think that the NFL's defense would be, you know, any of these big bets are getting flagged or getting looked into the sports books and whatever the app is. I mean, they're going to, in theory, look into it if it's suspicious. But what is anybody, you know, nothing can stop anybody from just having a network of friends and giving them insider trading knowledge. I mean, that's what it is. It's insider training. I think it's happening. I think we'd be naive to think it's not happening to some extent. I mean, this guys have gotten suspended and that's all we know right now. I guess my question for you is like, do people care? Like I care, you care. I think it does affect the purity of the game and we're naturally skeptical and suspicious. Because maybe that's our nature, you know, as Daily Orange trained journalists to question things. But I don't know, like kids, Generation Z, do they even care about all this? I hope they do, but I don't know if that's the case.
Here's what I think they will, because what the NFL is doing is they've seen the trends. They know that you're not going to grow up now as like a dyed-in-the-wool fan of a team in the city that you live. Like that whole thing is gone. They've seen the NBA, you know, you're either a fan of a player or you're a fantasy guy or you're something else. And so the NFL is basically switching, I think, from sort of a diehard fandom product to a gaming product where it's completely based around fantasy and gambling, right? And if you hook in Gen Z and beyond on that, but then there's an inkling that what you're providing is not completely ethically clean and pure, then I think at some point, I mean, shoot, we've seen that generation try to look into buying houses and stuff. Like, you know, you think they're going to start just throwing away pocket change on, you know, a parlay that they know, which are already like so astronomically rigged against them that all of a sudden they're going to be like, oh yeah, this is just like, this is worse than buying a scratch off. You know, I'd be better off buying a scratch off.
And the moral responsibility, I get it. Like alcohol is sold at stadiums and it's on you to safely get yourself home. But God, I feel like the NFL has some type of responsibility. There should at least be some trigger in the owner's brains that this is kind of wrong. Like lives are being ruined right now across America. And you're not going to necessarily see stories about that written broadcast? I mean, I imagine some will come out. Maybe you're working on something right now, but I don't know. I feel like it's anecdotal, but it's probably happening all over the place where, you know, it's addictive in a way that almost alcohol is not, because it's so easy. We're all on our phones. So many people are addicted to the screen. You can convince yourself that you know something nobody else knows. You know, maybe you've got 5, 6, 7, 8 beers in you at the game and you place right. a bet. And poof, just like that, there goes your kids' college funds. And it's the NFL that's legitimizing this all and making it so easy through these apps. It's kind of gross, honestly. I mean, they're kind of drug dealers themselves in that way that it's hard for me to support it, to gamble myself. Maybe I sound like a prude, but God, I don't know where this goes, but I don't think it's going to be pretty.
You and I are also in a similar stage of life where we have young kids, and you stop viewing things in terms of real money, and in exchange, you view them as things that your kids need. And so, like, you know, I remember, like, I had a buddy who owed me like $400, right? And just like, and a buddy that didn't have kids, and I had kids, and it's like, what's the big deal? And I was like, that's a crib. That's why it's a big deal. That's how much a crib costs, you know, or that's how much the dresser costs. Or like, if it's over a certain amount of money, it's like, that's what goes in the college fund, you know? And so for me, it's like, it breaks my heart to see, like, because we're sort of the tail end of the age group that's really hurting from this, right? Is like, it breaks my heart to see some of that money just going to, like, you know, you line the pocket of Jerry Jones for no apparent reason. You know, it doesn't need to be. You could just watch a football game. You can read Go Long or Sports Illustrated, and we'll teach you about the players and what's cool about them and what's awesome about it without having to place a bet on it. That's my take.
Put it on a t-shirt, Connor. I couldn't agree more. That's so beautifully said. And I think it is the generation, right, below us that feels vested, and they do win bets, right? And I think when you do win a few bets, you gain a little false confidence. But at the end of the day, that sports book is going to make money. The NFL is going to make money, and it's going to be at the expense of the everyday man, everyday woman. And it's really sad. I don't know where it's going to go. And I think also, you know, remember these NFL players too. I think a lot of them have addictive personalities to 100%. Begin with. I mean, that's part of what makes them so great at their jobs is, you know, they're training nonstop, running nonstop, hitting each other at these ludicrous, violent angles all the time. Like, you've got to be a type A, just insanely intense dude to even play professional football. And now you've got access to this mm-hmm. all, and you're a part of this all. It's a toxic mix that I think is probably worse than we even know it is right now.
As the grandchild of a one-time professional gambler, I can share, before we get into whether we think these teams are going to exceed expectations or not, the only good piece of gambling advice I ever got from my grandpa, who actually did gamble for a living. And he said, Connor, only bet on Ivy League football. He's like, that's what I'm going to tell you. And he said, because there's never any upsets. And that was back then in the day where you could just, like, call the sports information director at, like, Penn and be like, hey, anybody hurt, you know, that, you know, or anything like that. you finagle a couple bucks out of it and, you know, you move on. But that's not it's not the case anymore. If you're betting on Penn football, you're in a jam you got to get out of. That's all I'm saying.
I don't want to use his name because he'd probably kill me. I had a good buddy that our age, who this before gambling was legalized and mainstream, he had a bookie, and he would just research the hell out of mid-major college basketball and make bank because people placing bets did not know half as much as he did. So maybe there is, like, a niche for the gambler out there. And if you're in, you've got to be in, right? I think, you know, Adam Carolla used the awful analogy. It's like, you know, if you don't just kind of do cocaine, like you're either a cokehead or you're not. It's like, you're either into gambling or you're not. You can't just kind of dip your toe into it. And oh my God, it's so funny hearing you talk about, like, your first exposure to gambling. I can remember, like, being in third or fourth grade, going to a buddy's house at my school, and his dad was into this thing called gambling. I didn't even know really what it was. He'd you know, he'd gamble on football games, basketball games, and it's kind of gross, but his good luck charm was he had a jar of his kid's toenails, and he would put it on his TV, and he swore whenever he put the jar of toenails on the TV, like, the team he bet on would win.
Oh.
And I'm kind of like, you know, you're that young, and you think it's kind of, it's not weird and disgusting because you're a little kid. Looking back, it's pretty gross. It's pretty awful.
The whole thing. But you're right. It's not like you're a kid. When you're a kid, you accept so much external stimuli. You're like, yeah, no, that's fine. Everybody does that.
Toenails,
you
know? Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. My only positive gambling experience in my life was my wife and I went to the Belmont when we were dating, and we bet on every horse whose name sounded Italian. And then I think she won like $800 or something like that. That was like, we walked away up. But you know, you end up spending that on like, that's what like 4 mint juleps cost at the Belmont racetrack. So, you end up breaking even.
Maybe that's what it cost to hang out with Aaron Rodgers at one of these events, right? You get behind the red velvet rope and you can say hello for $800.
What a good segue, Tyler, because, by the way, Tyler, if you go back to, the beginning of the Packers and Aaron Rodgers divorce, and even before that, I think you can trace the tea leaves through reporting that Tyler and Bob McGinn, who's amazing and works at Go Long, you know, you guys were it. You guys were the roots of that reporting, and I think anyone who wants to understand the Packers-Rodgers split beyond what is said on some syndicated daily talk show that sort of just lets him say whatever he wants, you know, I would, if you're interested in the other side, I would read Tyler's reporting. It's very good. You can subscribe to Go Long. So what I want to do today is I want to take some of the win totals, the over-unders, and I want to actually talk about them. And, we can go long, we can go short on some of these, but I picked out four that really interest me. And the first one, Tyler, I'm going to skip right to it because you mentioned AR is the New York Jets. 9.5 is the betted over-under. You know more than Aaron Rodgers. You know more about Aaron Rodgers than anybody. What do you think about this? I think 9.5 is a lot, personally. And that's not an anti-Aaron Rodgers take. That is, for me, a pro Bill Belichick take, a pro Mike McDaniel take, and a pro Sean McDermott take. That's one of the best coached divisions in the NFL.
And the New York Jets are historically an abomination of a franchise that somehow, some way, finds a way to disappoint in moments exactly like this right here. I mean, you've lived those seasons more than me being in New Jersey, but It just feels like this is going to go sideways one way or another. And it's the honeymoon period right now. I'm honestly shocked that Aaron Rodgers graced the team with his presence at OTAs. I really thought, you know, there's probably some understanding that he doesn't really need to be there because he blew off the Packers OTAs the last 2 years. And it showed. Anybody this side of Tom Brady at 39-40, you're going downhill. Like, I think Tom Brady like broke our brains. Like, he is in a world, a stratosphere of his own that maybe Patrick Mahomes gets to. But in terms of age, even with the way the rules are set up, even with him having autonomy at the line of scrimmage, I'm sure they're giving him everything he wants offensively, behind the scenes, whatever. I don't know. I think you saw signs of decline last year. Physically, he just really couldn't get out of jams like he used to. I remember covering Green Bay from whatever it was, 2011 to 15, and sitting in that press box. It was like when there was somebody in his face, even if it was a free runner, you knew that he was going to throw it 30, 40, 50 yards downfield and the defense was doomed because he was going to make that guy miss. He was going to get out of the pocket. He was going to improvise. And he was going to find the open receiver because he is a savant like that. But physically, he can't do that anymore. And also, he had open receivers last year. He just didn't see the field like he used to. Maybe that was him really not caring in the offseason and not wanting to work with these young receivers. But what made him special, and I've said it again and again, but like Davante Adams in 2015 was written off by a lot of fans, a lot of people as a bust. He wasn't that good that season when Jordy Nelson tore his ACL. But 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons with Aaron Rodgers built up thousands upon thousands of reps. And that is where Aaron Rodgers taps into his greatness. When he can just check to a play that he ran with Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I've talked to young receivers on the team and they're like, dude, Aaron's checking to plays. I was still in high school when he took this play. I don't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's part of his genius. So can you really just wave a magic wand with really good players like Garrett Wilson and create that? I think that they might be good. They might be okay. But I'm taking the Bills. I'm taking the Dolphins. I'd even take the Patriots ahead of the Jets. I think they finished last in the division.
My wild take is that the Patriots win this division. I'll have you back on for another pod because I really want to dissect that. But the one last point I'll make on Aaron Rodgers is I think that the one thing that we're overlooking, and I do think he's a special player. I did encourage the Jets to go get him because I think they didn't have another choice. They put themselves in a position where this was the only option. But for everybody that says, oh, Tom Brady can play forever, Tom Brady can play forever, Tom Brady can play forever, Tom Brady has a Tom Brady offense that allows Tom Brady to play forever. Tom Brady doesn't get hit. Tom Brady gets rid of the ball after two steps. Tom Brady, yes, throws the ball well vertically. I think he kind of busted that sort of trope where we're like, oh, he only throws short passes. But, you know, that it's different than what Aaron Rodgers does. I think part of Aaron Rodgers' beauty, and you sort of touched on it, is the bizarre arm angles, the fact that he can throw off platform really well, the fact that he can throw out a rhythm and disrupt a team. You know, he sort of reinvented the RPO in his own likeness and in his own way that sort of changed the way that we looked at stuff. But you need a certain peak of athleticism to be able to do that consistently. I don't doubt that he's training hard, but I think, you know, we're all dudes staring down the blackness that is our late 30s. You know, we're not what we used to be, you know, and I don't know. I mean, that is enough for me to be like, okay, I might just go under here. I don't know. 9.5 wins is a lot. It's a lot of wins.
Yeah, I know. Like here we are talking about the evils of gambling. I want to place a bet right now. I had no idea the number was that high. Right? That's how they suck you in. But yeah, great points all around. I think also you never really know what's going on in somebody's head, but Aaron Rodgers has really let us know via his platform on the Pat McAfee show. And, you know, he doesn't always tell the truth, but he talks a lot. I feel like Tom Brady relentlessly has pursued greatness in a way Aaron Rodgers isn't remotely close to. Like, I don't think Aaron Rodgers wants to win championships like a fraction as bad as Tom Brady did toward the end of his career. It's just not really what gets him up in the morning and gets him going. Like, he wants to be really good. I'm not saying he's lazy and is checked out, but it's not on Tom Brady's level. Like, Brady was an absolute maniac, even through the Tampa years. Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he talks more about what people say about him than he does, you know, tapping into his intensity and how he's pursuing a Super Bowl. Like, I feel like we know his opinion of anybody who's ever had a negative word to say about him a lot more than what's it like as you're relentlessly trying to win a second Super Bowl. And probably says a lot.
Yeah. Now I'm going to flip it on you. Green Bay Packers, 7.5 wins. Again, not an anti-Aaron Rodgers take, but to me a pro Matt LaFleur take, a pro Brian Gutekunst, and really the Packer way take. I don't hate over on 7.5. Jordan Love looked pretty good. You did a lot of writing on Jordan Love. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jordan Love has been this. We just don't see this in modern football. I mean, when you're drafted in the first round, you're playing as a rookie. You're thrown into the fire. And that's really good. I mean, Jalen Hurts has grown so much year one, year two, year three. But I think we forget that the Jordan Love that was drafted in 2020, even the Jordan Love that we saw start against Kansas City in 2021, even the Jordan Love that looked damn good against Philly last year in that fourth quarter, is not who we're going to see starting. I mean, he has been working nonstop, developing, grooming, becoming a direct extension of everything Matt LaFleur wants offensively. And we haven't really seen Matt LaFleur's offense in full. It's been this mixture of LaFleur's playbook, Aaron Rodgers' playbook. You know, he's been able to change stuff at the line. Like, hey, I know that Jordan Love is working with Steve Calhoun, his personal quarterback's coach, his mentor, every offseason. And Calhoun has been in direct conversation with LaFleur day in, day out, like almost kind of like he's been created in this lab for everything that LaFleur and the Packers want. I think the line's probably better than people think. Yeah, they're really young at receiver, but hell, those receivers, I know they're glad they can speak the same language as their quarterback now. Aaron Jones has been one of the more underrated stars in the NFL. And the defense, hey, they didn't play well most of last season. They came on at the end. You still have some talent on that side of the ball. I would absolutely go over here. I think the Packers are going to make the playoffs.
I do too. I love the Lions, and you spent a week in Detroit with Go Long, which was great. I would soft pencil them in as the division winner with the Packers as your wild card, but I could see it going the other way too. I mean, I don't think the Vikings are winning 10 games. I mean, they were the luckiest team in NFL history last year, statistically. And I think what they win 9 one-score games. There's no shot that that goes their way again this year. So I feel like, I don't know, boy, would it be weird if the Packers made the playoffs and Rodgers didn't. Man, like, because it's different than Belichick not making the playoffs and Brady making the playoffs. Because I feel like this one, it's a more even, it's almost, it would be as if almost like Belichick made the playoffs and Brady didn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, Aaron Rodgers has the star-studded roster. He has everything set up for him, whereas the Packers are trying to do this from the ground up. Boy, what would the content? What would the go-long content be like, Tyler, if the Packers made the playoffs and the Jets didn't?
Probably be pretty good for go-long. We'll definitely tap into that energy if possible. I think Love is I think he's going to be really good. I could be dead wrong, but he's athletic. He's got a big arm, and even if you go beyond the box score in exhibition games, and I know it's awful to even talk about meaningless football because it doesn't mean anything at all. But even when you watch what he did athletically in some of those games and some of those incomplete passes, it was kind of like a young Aaron Rodgers, like moving left, flipping his torso around, flinging it. Like, whew. I mean, he can make the sort of throws that Aaron Rodgers just can't make right now. And Christian Watson looked damn good. Big, fast. Romeo Doubs has been his go-to guy in practice. They've drafted a ton of tight ends. I can see a lane where Jordan Love, I think they get into the playoffs, probably not a Super Bowl winning team this year, but I think you're going to see enough out of Jordan Love to be really excited when the season's over.
Two more that I want to get your take on real quick that I'm kind of interested in. Titans, 7.5 wins. I have not confirmed that you're a Vrabel guy, but I feel like I went to college with you. I feel like I know a little bit about you. I would guess that you're a pro Vrabel guy. I don't know. I feel like if Mike Vrabel was the editor-in-chief of the Daily Orange, you and I would have done all right for ourselves.
Oh, man, it would have been a rip-snorting good time. He'd have us lined up for a little bull in the ring right there in the sports office, right? You know, I'll have a number, call it out. Yeah. The Titans aren't going to be bad, right? He's too good of a coach for this to be a bad team. The Texans will probably be bad. The Colts, lots of love with Anthony Richardson. Hard to see them competing for a playoff spot this year. Process of elimination, I mean, they're the second best team in the division. At the same time, though, the AFC is loaded, and I have a hard time talking myself into Ryan Tannehill, Will Levis, getting you to 8-9 wins this year. I don't think they're going to bottom out, but they're going to teeter right around that number, in my opinion.
I feel like that's going to be one of those teams where for absolutely no reason this year just wins like 9 or 10 games. And everyone's like, what, why? Like Derrick Henry's 34 and he's just cranking, you know, I don't know. There are things that we think we know about the NFL, and then we always get hit with that commonsensical, like, okay, Mike Tomlin's a good coach. Mike Vrabel is, to me, sort of the heir apparent of Mike Tomlin and the fact that, like, they will always win more than they lose. You know, I think that, I don't know. So I thought that was kind of an interesting one. I feel like we're fading That's on the point. Titans a little bit.
I think we're all so excited about Jacksonville, and I am. I love Jacksonville.
That's what happens, though, right?
It does.
That's what happens. Like, we get obsessed with one team, and then another coach like Mike Vrabel just beats that into their players' heads over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, you got a juggernaut here. All right, last one for you, Tyler. Thanks again for coming. You're the best. Eagles, 11.5 wins. I don't know, man. What do you think?
I'm going under. I think that, God, as good as that roster is, Jeff Stoutland just building this absolute
machine.
Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. We both talked to him. The guy is a genius, and they'll be able to plug and play whoever on that offensive line at this point. Even some of the players they've drafted on the line, it's like they think 1-2 years ahead. Like whatever Jason Kelce does retire, they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, though, to replace coaches, and they lost both coordinators. They've lost some really good players. Another year of film for people to study Jalen Hurts. He's going to have a counter, whatever defenses throw at him. But the number one reason I'd go under is the New York Giants. And it's crazy to verbalize this when the team was just such a disaster 2 years ago. But Joe Shane, Brian Daboll have brought such competency. I love what they did in the offseason. The Daniel Jones contract isn't nearly as bad as people thought it was. I mean, and to keep a good thing going with Brian Daboll, sign me up. He's the best teacher of the position for my money in the sport. Darren Waller gives you a dimension. They signed a bunch of other receivers. I think they're only going to be better. And it's crazy to say it because Philly did just knock him out pretty bad in the playoffs. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Giants win the division. I just trust the people in charge to improve upon what was. I mean, nobody expected the Giants to be any good last year, and they made the playoffs.
Despite an absolutely criminal schedule that the Giants got for this year, I think Big NFL is trying to hose Daniel Jones and not let Danny Dimes exert the full force of his power. But I do think Daboll, Wink Martindale, I think that's a coaching staff that can overcome. I'm very interested to see what they do this year. I like the Giants a lot. Tyler, thank you so much for coming on, buddy. Give the people, tell them where they can find you one more time before we get out of here.
Oh man, it was my pleasure, Connor. We got to do this more often. And thanks for coming on my show too. GoLongTD.com, go long on Substack. You can subscribe to the free list if you want. Otherwise, to get everything, it's just $8 a month, $50 a year. And we're going to have a ton of season preview stories coming out in August for the paid subscribers. So, yep, you got it, man. Like long form, like, hey, it's the same way you're wired. We're just trying to give people a story that hopefully makes them stop whatever they're doing in this crazy world and read for 20, 25 minutes. That's always kind of the forefront of my mind. Is this a story that people are going to want to stop what they're doing and read and you know, learn, right? Let's go beyond the GIFs and the memes and the takes and the tweets and the threads, whatever else is out there, and tell a story. So thankfully, a lot of players were willing to sit down and share. So thank you so much for everybody subscribing.
That's right. Thanks again, buddy. The MMQB NFL podcast is produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit, and Rec League basketball three-point assassin Gary Gramling are the founders of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.